This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
This is Amtower Off-Center on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Every week, speaker, consultant Mark Amtower gives you his take on what's going on in the world of government contracting. Amtower Off-Center with your host, Mark Amtower.
Welcome to our no-holds-barred forum for discussing what's good, bad, ugly, and just plain silly in the arena of doing business with the government. I'm Mark Amtower. My guest today is a return guest of several times, Larry Allen, president of Allen Federal. You can find Larry at Allen, A-L-L-E-N, federal.com. Larry, welcome back, man.
Mark, great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Lots of stuff to talk about. I want to start, though, with end of FY. It is looming. I want to know what you're hearing. Is there loose change left? Is everything in the queue? What's going on?
Well, Mark, it's a great question for this time of year, and I think the answer is, in most cases in government procurement, is it depends. But the companies I've been talking to have really seen a massive uptick in quoting activity, even in just the last 2 weeks. Whereas talking to companies in August, middle August, they were saying, you know, we really haven't seen a lot of uptick in year-end activity. And they were, of course, kind of holding their breath, saying, you know, gee, we hope it comes in September. And the companies that I've spoken to in September have all said, you know, we're really busy now. It has all come in September. And I had the opportunity just earlier this week to talk to a number of government contracting officers, and they said, yes, absolutely. Our contracting activity in September is up over last September's in the past. And the primary reason is we got a very late start for this fiscal year because we didn't get our appropriations from Congress until April, and OMB didn't tell us what we had to spend until May.
Okay. So it's looking sort of normal at this point.
Oh, I think like a very traditional year end in September, whereas maybe the last couple of years worth of September's, Mark, we've seen an atypical end of the fiscal year, things getting into the queue in June, July, early August. That really didn't happen so much this year. So this is a fire drill type of marketplace for many people. If we're talking about major service and support contracts, we'll then know most of those have been done, and those works are already well into the pipeline. But even major types of product buys, smaller purchase acquisition, service acquisitions, those are all things that are going to be done right up until midnight, September 30.
Okay, well, we're going to get into some of the smaller acquisitions later, particularly subscriptions, but they're being discouraged by somebody. But, you know, the other, I think, really big story just this last week or so is Senator McCain coming down on the cost plus, and not just for, you know, some contracts, but
trying to ban the use of certain types of cost-plus contracts within the Department of Homeland Security. Senate Homeland Security and Governmental Affairs Committee has been working on the markup of their DHS authorization bill, and McCain has made his comments sort of around the same time of this. And, Mark, I think it's an interesting remark coming from somebody like Senator McCain, who actually does have a pretty decent amount of knowledge about the federal acquisition process from a legislative standpoint. Let me say at the outset, I believe that there is no inherently bad contracting method. Of the contracting methods that are allowed in the federal government today, I don't believe that any of them are inherently bad. What it comes down to, Mark, make no mistake, is how the government manages the acquisition after the initial contract award is made. You can do cost plus contracting. You can do time, material, and labor hour contracting if you know how to do two basic things. One, do your acquisition planning up front so you have a good idea of what your needs are. And two, you manage the acquisition after you've put the award in place.
Yeah, I mean, it basically it's a matter of selecting the right vehicle for the right project, yes?
It is. And sometimes the government's needs are really set up to do cost plus. I find it ironic that Senator McCain is the ranking Republican on the Armed Services Committee, and if you talk to the people that he oversees in that capacity at the Pentagon, they're very big into cost plus contracting these days. They see the general topic of cost plus contracting as being a preferable alternative to time and material labor hours, as also a middle road between that and firm fixed price, because there's an understanding in at least some quarters of the government acquisition community, Mark, that the government has neither the number of contracting professionals or sufficient experience among those contracting professionals to effectively do firm fixed price contracting in all cases. We need to have alternative flexible acquisition methods to meet specific needs and also to meet the realities of the contracting corps that we have today in the federal government. So proscribing a certain type of contract type in all circumstances, I think, is not the way to go. I think it's an overreaction. Again, you're trying to manage what are really life cycle acquisition issues all by jumping up and down on the front end of the acquisition process, and it just won't work.
Okay. But why is Mr. McCain pursuing this? Was there a particular issue that got his attention?
Well, I think there are always particular issues. It's a big government out there, and there are different types of cost plus contracting. Apparently, the one that Senator McCain would like to prescribe recently had, I believe it was a DHS Inspector General report, which talked about inadequate management of the contract that the DHS had put into place for a lot of dollars, and it was on a cost plus basis, and nobody was really monitoring what the contractor was doing, and they got a certain amount of reimbursement over and above their cost. But again, that's not necessarily really, the government put this contract into place. The contractor was following the rules of the contract that the government awarded. If you are not happy with the outcome, then that suggests to me not that the contracting type was bad, but that the oversight that you provided on that contract was bad. And it really, Mark, gets to a couple things. Certainly it gets to the number of acquisition professionals we have in the government,
yep.
But it also gets to how those acquisition professionals are rewarded with career advancement and recognition. They're not rewarded today with kudos or advancement for managing contracts already in place. All the incentive to get ahead is in awarding new contracts. So you see successive awards of new contracts and very little attention being made. We need to change the method in which contracting professionals in government are incentivized.
Okay. And, we've talked, you and I, and I've done it on Francis's shows, the 1102 issue is huge. I mean, there's not enough of them. I don't believe they receive adequate training or support. And the communications on the front end between the people who need the stuff and the contracting officers is often inadequate, which leads to picking maybe the wrong type of contracting vehicle or inadequate input for the statement of work on the vehicle.
Inadequate input, Mark, and also I think there's a lot of times when if you have a contracting officer who has recently taken a class in cost plus contracting, suddenly all the business that comes out of that shop is on cost plus because that's the most recent method that they were trained on. Or the flip side of that is you have a younger contracting professional coming in and their more senior people have said, well, we've always done this contract on a time and materials basis. And the new contracting officer just says, okay, that's how we're going to continue to do it. regardless of whether or not that continues to be the proper method of acquisition. What that suggests is your basic point, Mark, is there's an underlying lack of training and the contracting core, people who don't have the time, don't have the ability to sit back and do good acquisition planning, except in the cases of very major acquisitions where their senior agency officials make them do it. And it's not necessarily the contracting core's fault.
No, not at all.
There are good people in the contracting core. If you give them a reasonable workload and give them the reasonable tools that, to do their job, I think they will give you reasonable outcomes.
Cool. All right, we're going to take our first break. When we come back, we're going to pursue other topics in the acquisition slash procurement space. I'm talking today with Larry Allen, president of Allen Federal. You can find him at allenfederal.com. I'm Mark Amtower, and you're listening to Amtower Off-Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. This is Mark Amtower. I've been advising contractors for almost 30 years, and when they need agency contacts, I always recommend Carroll's GovSearch. With over 350,000 contact listings and over 1,000 government organization charts, they help you find the people you need to reach in all levels of government. Give them a try. Get a free organization chart and a sample listing from their database. Contact Gordon Peel at 703-757-8228. Carroll Publishing, bringing government to you like no other.
Government personnel must continue to achieve mission-critical objectives no matter their work environment. Video conferencing technologies provide a highly effective collaboration solution for federal employees affected by budget cuts, BRAC initiatives, and telework mandates if they are secure based on open standards and deployable in limited bandwidth environments. Polycom is the first video provider to have an ultimate HD portfolio that is JITC certified, offering real-time face-to-face communication without compromising secure networks or consuming excessive bandwidth. Polycom enables government customers to collaborate over voice and video anywhere, anytime, securely both inside and outside the firewall, offering high-definition video calls at half the bandwidth of other companies. To learn more, visit polycom.com/federal.
The Telework Center arms you with all the information you need to know about teleworking in the federal government. Go to federalnewsradio.com, keyword Polycom.
Federal agencies such as the U.S. Department of Energy managing for performance and results? How have the Recovery Act and the GPRA Modernization Act of 2010 changed the way federal departments operate? Join host Michael Keegan on the next The Business of Government Hour as he explores these questions and so much more with Jay Hoffman, Director of the Office of Program Analysis and Evaluation within the U.S. Department of Energy.
As a home plate ump, my eyesight is my paycheck.
Strike one!
Strike, that thing was chin high!
But the price of monthly contact lenses was eating me up.
Strike two!
Come on, it bounced to the plate!
So to save some money, I'm just using these glasses I found. Cha-ching!
Strike three, you're out!
He hasn't even pitched the ball yet!
There's an easier way to save. Get online, go to geico.com, get a quote. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
And now Ask the CIO, brought to you by Vion Corporation.
Matt Perry is the Office of Personnel Management's Chief Information Officer. He says the agency is in need of an across-the-board technology upgrade.
One of the things that we've had to do is look at introducing new technologies. And my deputy and I did an evaluation of the current operating status and equipment, and then started to do an approach so that we could start virtualizing servers, refreshing computers, moving to laptops in order to support the telework and our ROW initiatives.
Sound familiar?
Where's my data stored? Who owns it? How many duplicates exist? How much file data is unused? How are we going to pay for all of it?
Vion Corporation's capacity services is the answer. Your organization needs a trusted advisor with the right technical tools and the right financial expertise to solve big storage problems for good. For over 31 years, Vion Corporation and Hitachi Data Systems have been planning and preparing to solve big data problems for the government at the exabyte level. Visit Vion.com to learn more. That's Vion.com.
Listen to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio 1500 AM every Friday morning at 11 o'clock. Brought to you by the attorneys of Shaw, Bransford, and Roth. Fed Talk features live interviews with guests from the federal community, sharing their insights on issues that affect you. Call in or email questions or comments to FedTalk at federalnewsradio.com. Fed Talk is sponsored by GEICO.
This week, host Deborah Roth will be joined by Jim Seymour of the Partnership for Public Service and several Service to America Medal Award winners for a post-analysis of the awards ceremony.
Ravens fans, 1500 AM Federal News Radio is your D.C. home for Ravens football. Listen to every game as the Ravens dominate the AFC North and march toward the Super Bowl.
Send the five, still on his feet, touchdown!
Fires over the middle, it's intercepted! Ray Lewis with the pick!
Flacco throws, end zone, touchdown Ravens! The Ravens offense delivers the miracle!
Catch all the action as the Ravens take on the St. Louis Rams Sunday, September 25th. Pre-game starts at 3:35 p.m. on 1050 AM.
Welcome back to Amtower Off-Center on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Mark Amtower. My guest today is Larry Allen of AllenFederal.com. Larry, you're speaking at the during the
Federal Contracting Week, Mark.
Yeah.
The third week in October here in Washington, D.C. A series of classes sponsored by Thomson Reuters. I will be teaching the Advanced Issues in Multiple Award Schedule Contracting class.
Cool. And where can people find info on that?
You find information on that in the Week Ahead newsletter that Allen Federal puts out. It'll be on our website at allenfederal.com.
Cool. And for those of you interested in, especially you CEOs interested in using LinkedIn, I'm doing a session on September 29th for, this is embarrassing, I forget the name of the company, but you can find it at probeninc.com. But it's going to be an hour session on why CEOs need to pay attention to LinkedIn, develop policy, and implement some activity, because there's an there's an extraordinary amount going on there, and there's over 6,000 groups that deal with some facet of the government market.
LinkedIn, I can tell you, Mark, has been really a growing presence. The amount of people I get who request a LinkedIn contact for me just grows every week, and while some of them are former federal sources people, there are certainly lots of others.
Okay, and to that end, there's Lisa DeZutti, Market Connections, has in October. You can find marketconnectionsinc.com. They have their government social media study presentation also at the in somewhere in Tysons. I think it's at the Marriott. So that's coming up. So some events you might want to consider going to. Let's go to OFPP guidance. What is this guidance coming out of OFPP right now?
Well, Mark, this past week, the Office of Federal Procurement Policy put out a proposed rule that would, again, take the current limitations on government agency contact with lobbyists and potentially even those that work for groups that have registered lobbyists, which would be just about everybody, over and above the current restrictions. Currently, the restrictions are you can't take more than $50 a year in any type of meal or entertainment from any one source, and only $20 per incident under that $50 a year rule.
Yeah, and that's been right. Been the Office of Government Ethics guidance forever.
For a number of years, right? And there also currently are ways to allow government employees in the normal discourse of their duties to attend what is known as widely attended gatherings. And in my previous life at the Coalition, we got widely attended gathering letters all of the time. And now this proposed rule would severely restrict the ability of federal agencies to participate in widely attended gatherings. I think that this is a net negative, Mark.
That's a huge negative. I mean, without the networking and informational events, the market's going to stagnate. I mean, we have enough problems with communications right now. I'm going to have Mark Foreman on with Ken Allen of ACT-IAC to talk about the ability of feds to communicate with industry and the recent issues in that arena. And this will be a huge part of that.
Well, indeed, it is a huge part of it. The ability to work as professional individuals within our common arena, whether we're government or industry, is indispensable to the efficient operation of this market. When you discourage federal government employees or prohibit federal government employees from participating in even widely attended gatherings, You are making it more difficult for federal professionals to do their job. You are also, I think, kind of insulting the integrity of federal officials if you say, we're not even going to allow you to take $50 from any one source during a couple of years. Basically, that means is no cups of coffee, you can't buy your government program manager or Starbucks anymore. And, you know, it sounds silly, but, you know, think about it. Those of us who live in this area particularly, we'll run into government people down at the Starbucks, and sometimes we'll buy them a coffee. Sometimes they'll buy us a coffee. This rule could potentially make that activity illegal. And
well, if the Gestapo happens to be in the Starbucks with their camera,
right. And you know, the effect of that is to chill interaction, to chill communication, and it also, again, I think, is insulting. No contracting professional that I'm aware of can be bought for a double pump caramel grande latte, no matter how much whipped cream you put on it.
I mean, it's stupid. I mean, I'd like to be a little more articulate in my comment there, but it boils down to just plain dumb.
It is, and it's interesting too, because on the other side, one of the major Office of Federal Procurement Policy initiatives this year, Mark, has been the Mythbusters campaign, which most people, including myself, see as a very positive thing in terms of stimulating the discourse between government and industry and trying to break down misconceptions that both industry and government have on basic things like when you can communicate with each other and how you can communicate with each other. And in its core, Mythbusters takes as a perceived good the ability to have good and frequent communications among those groups. And yet this Office of Government Ethics proposed rule put out by OFPP seems to be almost 180 degrees away from that. I think we need a little bit more myth busting, a little bit more communications promotion, a little bit more of the understanding that we give contracting professionals the ability to do their job without calling into question their basic integrity, and a little bit less of the type of things that are in this proposed rule.
Well, what we don't want to do is stifle venues where professionals from both sides get together in normal discourse.
That's exactly right. And, you know, I think all of this gets to a belief among some, I think a minority, Mark, but some people in the government contracting arena that think contractors equal inherently bad people. And a lot of this comes out of the IG community. And not to pick on the IGs, but IGs, you need to know that this is how you're perceived. I can remember several years ago, we would have events in my past association where we would have members of the IG community come out and talk about what they were doing. Now, of course, they weren't always everybody's most favorite speaker, but nevertheless, everybody benefited by having that interaction. And then now just a couple of years ago, IG stopped coming out and talking to contractor groups. I think that that's a dangerous thing. And now,
was that a was that a cartel of IGs that got together to decide not to attend?
That certainly seems like at least a small C cartel, Mark.
Okay.
But now that group is out putting pressure on everybody else in government not to communicate. Hey, you know what? You don't want to have a good opportunity to find out what the state of the market is for what you're buying. You don't want to have the ability to frame your requirements in ways that make sense for you to get good responsive bids. Go right ahead and prohibit communication. It'll just drive up the cost of government.
Well, that and the government wants to act in a more business-like manner, yet they're stifling businesses from acting in a business-like manner. A number of settlements, out-of-court settlements, and I'm not going to name any companies right now, have
right.
been relatively huge, but for violations that are really normal business.
That's exactly right, and companies pay those fines, I think, just to make the Department of Justice go away. While they look impressive in a press release, if you look at the overall scheme of things for any one of those companies, it's a much smaller impact. And really, as you say, you've got, it's not an indication of wrongdoing. It's just basically, please go away and let me do my business.
Right. It's a price they have to pay for doing business the way we do business.
That's exactly right. And it's also a misconception in this case among lawyers in the Department of Justice about what constitutes a traditional and acceptable commercial market, commercial market interaction, commercial market method of doing business. And yet, because of that lack of communication and understanding, there's an attempt to almost criminalize that in terms of what happens in the government market.
Okay. We're going to take a break. Let me apologize first, though, to Professional Benefits Solutions, which is the company hosting the event that I'm speaking at on September 29th. And that'll be at the Tower Club in the morning. Again, I'll be speaking on for CEOs on why and how to use social media, particularly LinkedIn. You can find that event at probeninc.com. And when Larry and I come back after the break, we're going to talk even more about all of this acquisition stuff in the news pipeline. I'm Mark Amtower, and you're listening to Amtower Off-Center on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Government technology professionals should prepare to attend GovCom 2011, the new trade show featuring government audiovisual communication solutions at the Walter E. Washington Convention Center, November 1st and 2nd, featuring nearly 100 leading manufacturers and solutions providers showcasing the latest in audio, video, conferencing, collaboration, control systems, digital signage, and visual display technologies. GovCom will help government agencies and the military boost collaboration, enhance security, improve reliability, and cut costs. GovCom is your opportunity to see cutting-edge communications products, network with fellow technology professionals, and get valuable training from leading experts in government and industry. For more information and your free exhibits pass, visit govcom2mshow.org and use the code FED. That's govcomshow.org. GovCom is brought to you by Infocom International, the association representing the audiovisual industry.
Arming your home security system gives you peace of mind, but are you paying $30, $40, $50 or more in monitoring fees? Switch to Ackerman Security Systems, the metro area's most trusted name in security, and pay just $18.95 a month. That's right, $18.95 a month, and no cost to switch. Don't have a system? Then Ackerman offers the latest technology, including wireless monitoring. Call by Wednesday and get 3 months of basic monitoring free when you switch or start service with Ackerman. Call 888-999-1070. AckermanSecurity.com.
Please join the American Federation of Government Employees for its series Inside Government, brought to you in part by Purchasing Power, Grantham University, and MetLife. The weekly program gives you the real story on what's happening inside federal agencies and the rights of federal employees. Hear the latest from the nation's top lawmakers, celebrities, journalists, union leaders, and federal workers. Don't miss AFGE's Inside Government, Friday at 10 a.m. right here on Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m.
There's no better way to study the world's best golf swings than to watch them side by side on the range. Move down the line from Arnold Palmer to Fred Couples to Phil Mickelson, and you notice not just the differences, but the similarities, like their wonderful balance, rhythm, and timing. And if you look closely as they leave, you'll notice something else they have in common. The same timepiece, a Rolex Day-Date. Available in 18-karat white or yellow gold or platinum, the Day-Date is put through 15 days and nights of the most grueling testing before it ever leaves Geneva. That ensures that, like these great golfers, it will perform as well in the real world as it does in practice. To see a complete selection of Rolex timepieces, visit your official Rolex jeweler.
See what a new watch can say about you at Tourneau, the world's largest watch store. Tourneau, the fashion center at Pentagon City, Arlington.
Retirement is expensive. You may need 70 to 90% of your pre-retirement income just to maintain your current standard of living. So how do you protect the money you've already saved from market fluctuations? How do you make sure you won't run out of money? Hi, I'm Mark Tabron. We'll tackle these questions and more every Saturday morning at 10:30. Learn how to protect and grow your money with me, Mark Tabron, on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Can't wait till Saturday? Then call me today at 301-773-3923.
Airplanes of the future could have a radical new design that will dramatically reduce fuel consumption, good for the environment and your pocketbook. A plane in early development would replace single-aisle 737s with a double-bubble configuration.
If you look at it from the front, it looks like two soap bubbles stuck together side by side, and it's twin-aisle.
Mark Drella, an MIT aeronautical engineer leading the design, says two aisles will dramatically speed boarding on this shorter, wider plane. With more weight shifted to the fuselage, engines can be mounted in the rear, reducing drag, and wings can be smaller and lighter. It also gets upward lift from
a funny upturned nose, which means you can use less downward force on the tail, and that makes the tail lighter.
Drella says foreseeable technology advances could allow the plane to have fuel savings of up to 70%.
In the near term, you could still maybe get 20-30%, which is still very attractive.
More at nae.edu/radio. With the National Academy of Engineering, Randy Atkins, Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Welcome back to Amtower Off Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I'm Mark Amtower. Today I'm here with Larry Allen, president of Allen Federal, and you can find Allen Federal at allenfederal.com. Larry, there's going to be a library set up for the contingency contracting. Can you give us a little detail on this, please?
Sure thing, Mark. Congressman John Tierney from Massachusetts introduced a bill recently, the Contingency Operation and Emergency Oversight Act, that would do a couple of things with contingency contracting. One of the things it would do would be to set up a center for contingency contracting so that when the government needed to go and make timely and very speedy awards, say in response to a natural disaster, they could do that. The other part of it would set up a specially discreet IG apparatus, oversight apparatus, for the type of contingency contracting.
More IG,
that's right. I think
always a good thing.
Yeah, well, Congressman Tierney's bill, I think, Mark, is indicative of a lot of feeling up on Capitol Hill among people who don't always know really what's going on in government contracting. You see the idea every now and then, every year or two, to come up with a special new contingency contracting program over and above the contracts that are already in place that can meet needs very quickly, like the GSA Schedules Program, for example, which you can get things done almost instantaneously through the Schedules Program. And other vehicles that work very quickly as well. Why you need a special batch of contingency contracts over and above what the government already has, I don't know. That would seem to be redundant. But the real thing that I think is potentially troublesome about this bill is that it would set up a special contingency IG and oversight capability. And while I think everybody wants to make sure that government funds are properly spent, understand the impact that this will have on the procurement community, particularly government contracting officers. You have a natural disaster. Let's say, let's hope we don't have one.
Let's just go back to Katrina.
Yeah. Exactly right. And you have contract decisions that need to be made on the spot. They're made under tremendous amount of political pressure to be responsive. Contracting officers are pulling their hair out in order to try to get things like water and shelter and basic food down to people who need it the most. And they're working, in some cases, 24 hours a day to try and meet those needs in a timely manner, because they know that Congress and others are going to harp on them if they don't get that relief to where it's needed. Now throw in the fact that you're going to have a specialized IG overseeing those moves 6 months down the road. Well, if I'm a contracting officer, the last thing I'm going to want to do is worry about whether or not the truckload of water that I just ordered into a natural disaster site cost a couple of bucks more than maybe it should have under optimum circumstances. I don't need somebody looking over my shoulder.
You could have saved $4.34.
That's exactly right. And yet you as the contracting officer are going to be repudiated for that, reviled for that decision. And yet if you hadn't made it in that timely manner, and maybe you actually made it with a Louisiana business that needed the business at that time, which was a perceived good. You know, people tend to forget that. So I think the net effect of setting up that type of oversight will be to chill speedy procurement decisions in a time when speedy procurement decisions are needed most.
Right. Well, it brings to mind for me something that I actually saw little snippets on TV. A high-ranking Army Corps officer being reamed by some lard-butted congressman about buying a tarp that for $2,500. Well, the tarp was covering a building that was huge, mm-hmm. and it included the cost of getting the tarp up there. I want to see Mr. Congressperson up that ladder putting the tarp on for anything less than $2,500. That really, you can't tell, but that incensed me somewhat.
Well, right, and you know, we empower people who need to make good, proper, quick decisions. You already have an established IG mechanism as well, Mark. Each agency already has.
Apparently, they're not enough.
A well-functioning IG staff. You know, some people would say very well-functioning. Therefore, creating another specially designated layer of IGs simply for contingency contracting, I'm not sure what deficiency that this legislation seeks to make better. You already have IGs. You already have contingency contracting capabilities. I think you ought to let the system run as it currently runs. If you've got a particularly bad outcome when somebody really did something they shouldn't do, there are already mechanisms well in place to capture that information and deliver the type of remedial action that needs to be delivered. It's not like we don't have that oversight today. I'm concerned that adding that extra special level of oversight, again, will mean that when you have the need for instantaneous response to crises, that it just won't be there because people in the contracting corps will be particularly sensitive of having another layer of overseers second-guessing what they did in a time of crisis.
You mean they're not looking forward to being summoned to Congress and reamed publicly?
Well, you know, we're talking here
it's
about...
It's airtime.
Right, we're talking here about all federal agencies, certainly, Mark, but, you know, since the DHS authorization bill is up before the Senate this past week, you know, we can talk a little bit about them. You know, one of the things that DHS executives in particular are crying out against is the fact that, hey, there are so many subcommittees in Congress that oversee
various...
Is it
21, something like that?
At least 21, that, you know, they're spending literally all of their time responding to congressional oversight and no time at all on program execution
or management,
right?
So cost
things
overruns.
Like that.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you're here in front of us instead of doing your job, so the contract's going
right
down the tubes. But it's your fault, not ours.
I'm sure that Congress is also going to do good oversight hearings in the wintertime, talking about why so much contracting got done quickly in late August and September of this year. Well, I would personally, if I could, give $1,000 to the first contracting officer who responded, "Well, Congressman, the reason we did that is because you didn't give us our spending bills until the end of April."
Right. We should take up, it'd probably be, you know, another cartel activity, but we should take up an industry fund to make sure that person, when they lost their job
that's
was,
right.
was funded for the rest of their days. But it would be refreshing to have somebody testifying before Congress say, you know, if you'd people get the heck out of the way and let us do our jobs, then maybe some things would get done in a more timely fashion.
Right.
Not that either of us have opinions, Larry. But, all right, we're going to take a break. You're listening to AM Tower Off Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
Meeting mission goals through technology, brought to you by General Dynamics Information Technology.
Los Angeles Air Force Base is about to become the first federal facility that relies almost entirely on electric vehicle technology for its fleet. The Air Force will replace virtually all the vehicles on the base with plug-in electric technology. The Air Force says the vehicles will be able to not only get their power from the electric grid, but they'll be able to supply power back to the base in the event of an outage. The Pentagon plans to use the project as a test bed for future electric vehicle efforts in the Defense Department.
General Dynamics Information Technology is dedicated to providing the latest, highest quality information technology services and resources to help organizations meet their mission objectives. Large-scale IT systems and communications networks are the strategic and operational heart of defense, intelligence, civilian government, and private business. They require the expertise of a company that delivers results. General Dynamics Information Technology, information technology, and professional services. Go to GDIT.com to learn more. That's GDIT.com.
The Pentagon and Beyond is brought to you by EADS North America.
Budget reductions continue for the Pentagon. The Senate Appropriations Defense Committee approved a 2012 budget of $513 billion, but it cut $1.6 from the Pentagon's previous $12.8 requested for the Afghan training mission. It also cut another $5 billion from other Afghan war line items. Pentagon spokesman George Little said no decisions about future spending on Afghan training have been made. I'm J.J. Green.
Airmen, we're on our way.
At EADS North America, we help our country respond to emergencies and natural disasters.
We see you. We're coming in.
From coordinating communications to medevac and emergency response, we provide the mission-critical systems our country demands. Every day, we support homeland security and defense missions here at home and around the globe.
Patient secure. ETA 10 minutes.
EADS North America. Commitment defines us. Made in America. Those words mean a lot. From uniforms to help desk support to office supplies, Ability One employees deliver quality, American-made solutions to our federal government. Ability One creates jobs for people who are blind or have other significant disabilities without relying on taxpayer subsidies. For quality products and services right here at home, contact AbilityOne.org. Because Made in America is more than a label. It's a promise kept to more than 47,000 Americans who are willing and able to work.
When I was young, I fell in love with you. Head over heels in love. I mean crazy in love. I took you everywhere. Parties, barbecues. I even fell asleep listening to you every night. Ah, radio. But now my love affair continues thanks to HD Radio. It's got everything I've loved about radio and more. More local stations, more variety, more value. And HD radios are as low as $50. Talk about a cheap date.
Learn more at HDRadio.com. HD Radio. More stations.
More value.
More of what you listen to radio for.
Things just don't happen. You need a plan. A federal career can last 30 years or more, and so can federal retirement. Tune in each Monday at 10 a.m. to get the information you need to plan your course for financial security, solid benefits, and optimum health care. 100% focused on the federal employee for your benefit, presented by NITP, has the answers to your mid-career and retirement planning questions. Listen to For Your Benefit, Mondays at 10 a.m. on 1500 a.m. Federal News Radio for an hour that can change your future.
The Federal Drive is every weekday from 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. on Federal News Radio 1500 a.m. Hear interviews, news, perspective, and analysis from Tom Temin and Amy Morris. The Federal Drive team will help give you the important information you need about the federal government and how it impacts your organization or agency. Tune in 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. or go to federalnewsradio.com. The Federal Drive is sponsored by CDWG. CDWG, the people who get it.
Join 36,000 people from around the world, including senior leaders from the Army, DOD, and Congress, at the 2011 AUSA Annual Meeting and Exposition. This professional development forum is October 10th through the 12th at the Washington Convention Center and features exhibits on two levels and in five halls, all centered around this year's theme, America's Army, the Strength of the Nation. Admission is free but limited to qualified persons. For more information, please visit www.ausa.org.
Connect with Federal News Radio wherever you are. Like us on Facebook to see the hottest news stories on your wall. Follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/FedNewsRadio. Download our free iPhone app. Just go to the App Store and search for Federal News Radio. And now, connect to the radio station straight from your cell phone. Just call 712-432-6616. Go to federalnewsradio.com and search for social media for details.
Welcome back to Amtower Off Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I'm Mark Amtower. My guest is Larry Allen, president of Allen Federal. You can find Larry at allenfederal.com. You can find me at federaldirect.com or .net. They both go to the same place. Larry, before we get started here, how do you assist companies? Give me a 30-second commercial here.
Well, I appreciate the opportunity to do that. First of all, right now, Mark, I'm working with companies on their strategic business development marketing plans for the next fiscal year, working on specific things like messaging. I also am doing government contracts reviews of certain contracts, particularly GSA contracts. Not doing scheduled consulting, I want to make that clear, but I am doing compliance issues. Doing a lot of training for companies' dealer networks on how to approach the government market and working with them on some of their public policy issues, as well as those public policy issues attend to certain types of government contracting. So one of the more interesting things, I can't really talk a bit about it, but I'm being an expert witness on a case right now involving a Contractor Trade Agreements Act issue. I expect that'll be an awful lot of fun.
Number one, expert witnesses can make a few bucks, which is a good thing. But more importantly, you bring a perspective to the case that may not be there otherwise. So, Larry didn't know he was getting that commercial. I get calls on the contracting side. Mm-hmm. Keep in mind, boys and girls, Mark is a marketing guy. I don't do the contracting side. That's why I hang out with people like Larry and my friend Richard Mackey, because they are where I funnel the technical questions.
Right. In fact, Mark, I don't do the types of things that you do. Your expertise is much more specific than mine. Mine is putting together the general playbook so that people can go to folks like you to get the playbook executed.
There you go. Cool. So back to the issues at hand. I was actually very surprised. Mr. Weigelt writing in, I think it was in WashTech, one of the 1105 publications. I like reading Matthew's stuff. But Mr. Obama wants small businesses reimbursed in 15 days of invoice. Hello.
It's a great idea. And in fact, Mark, one of the things I thought was interesting about it was this was a significant part of the president's Jobs Act speech he gave to Congress a little while ago. And those of us who are in government contracting don't expect the president of the United States to mention government contracting during a major national speech to a joint session of Congress. So there you go. And you're right. You know, it's his quick pay initiative. And it would require agencies to cut checks to small businesses within 15 days of invoice instead of 30, the idea being to improve cash flow to small business contractors. As a concept, Mark, I think it's a great idea. The government needs to be able to respond to invoices submitted by small businesses particularly fast, because small businesses are really reliant on cash flow in order to fund their business. And one of the current problems is you have automated systems that aren't necessarily populated by contracting officers in a timely manner, so that when the contractor's invoice hits that automated system, it doesn't match up with something that a contracting officer has approved. And that can make it difficult for a timely payment even within 30 days to be issued. In fact, I'd be willing to bet that most small businesses would be happy if they got paid within 30 days of invoicing.
One other item I definitely want to hit on today. Mr. Biden had a speech last week where he was talking about And Jason Miller's headline on Federal News Radio was agencies must cut travel, publication, and other expenses. Boom. This one seemed particularly gratuitous to me that Mr. Biden would single out publications. You know, subscriptions, Schedule 76, is not one of the larger schedules. There's 98 vendors, and this may seem like a lot of money to some, but in government terms, it's not. It covered $123 million in change in FY 2010.
And just to add perspective to your listeners, Mark, that $123 million ranks that GSA schedule among the smaller GSA schedules in terms of total business.
GSA's did almost $40 billion in 10.
That's exactly right. So $40 billion versus 120-some-odd million. You can see that this is a percentage. And the other thing that I thought was notable is we're going to be talking about cutting agency travel. Well, agency travel, I think, has already been cut. And there are certain ways you can do things intra-agency via webinars and these types of online conferences and things of that nature. However, my concern, especially tied with the other topic we talked about earlier with that proposed rule, will be to have the effect of agency personnel not going to conferences and training sessions that they need to go to legitimately stay on top of their business, stay on top of their profession, be able to understand what it is they're getting. And that's the same thing with subscriptions, too. What we want in the government acquisition workspace is buyers who understand a little bit about the market in which they're conducting the purchase. Well, if you don't allow them to travel, if you're cutting their access to subscription-based information...
Yeah, we're not talking People Magazine here.
Right, and you are cutting their training budgets. How do you expect to maintain a cadre of well-trained and educated government professionals who understand what they're buying and, more importantly, how to oversee the management of that project throughout its lifetime?
Right. And travel, there's several aspects of travel. FedRooms, the GSA program negotiated with hotel. Great program to reduce travel costs. The management of the travel card through the Smart Pay program is extraordinary. They negotiate wonderful rates with rail, air, and auto rental. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's some extraordinary things that have happened to reduce the costs of travel already.
Right, and I think you've already seen agencies take measures in many cases to try to reduce their travel expenses, to try to do more intra-agency discussions on online mechanisms. At the GSA Expo, we know for the last couple of years, all GSA personnel have been required to get to and from their hotels via bus. Nobody's been allowed to rent a car, so that keeps costs down and also is a more sustainable way of doing business.
Sure.
So, these calls for additional cuts have to be put in perspective. A, we're talking about cutting very small types of expenditures anyway. B, these are expenditures that have already received scrutiny in many agencies. I think most people want to see the government making good progress in cutting costs. But the type of things that we're talking about here in this instance aren't enough to really write home about.
Right. They seemed a bit gratuitous. Larry, thanks again for coming back.
Mark, great to be here. Always a pleasure.
Indeed. You've been listening to Amtower Off-Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. My guest has been Larry Allen, president of Allen Federal. You can find him at allenfederal.com. And we didn't get to it, but subscribe to his week ahead newsletter right there at allenfederal.com. This is not my day job. If you need to get your company more PR, more visibility in the government market, we need to talk. Contact me at mark@federaldirect.net. And remember, you have not been everywhere till you've been off-center with Amtower.
You've been listening to Amtower Off-Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear it in its entirety on our website, federalnewsradio.com. Amtower Off-Center, Monday afternoons at noon, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM, WFED, your source for federal news now.